May God have mercy on our souls for what we've just done.
On this episode of the MacGuffin Guild, we're going to get thrown in the slammer with Zach, Jack, and Bob in Down by Law. This 1986 comedy crime drama was written and directed by Jim Jarmusch and stars Tom Waits, John Lurie, Roberto Benigni, and Ellen Barkin. We're going to talk about Tom Waits' impact on music and film, how Down by Law differs from Ghost Dog, the careers of Roberto Benigni and John Lurie, Pat's Solid Number 2, and Tim Burton's Jazz Explosion. We'll discuss how to be confident but not cocky, exceptional bush shots, distant off-screen train whistles, as well as the band Skeleton Key and the Phantom Limb Company. For those of you who don't know, we'll get into Pat's top three all-time favorite musical acts, best on-screen hiccups, what jobs Justin, Mike, and Pat have worked together, and ask the question, just how thick are the laughs? I'm Pat Doherty, and as always, I'll be joined by my fellow MacGuffins, Justin Jones and Mike Antonio. Our theme song was written and performed by Jordan Vincent. It's not where you start, it's where you start again in Down by Law.
I raised you better than this.
And welcome to another episode of the MacGuffin Guild. I am Pat Doherty, and I am with the MacGuffins, first and foremost. Justin, how's it going, Justin?
I'm here. Here I am.
Are you doing well?
Yeah, I'm doing good, I guess.
Oh, good.
I don't know. Direct questioning makes me nervous.
Oh, don't be nervous. Oh, it's okay.
Can you rephrase the question to make it not so
direct?
Okay.
No. Mike Antonio is also with us. Mike, how are you doing?
Chilling. Killing.
Oh. Okay. Well, I am so glad that you two are with me.
Are you?
Anyway, let's get to... Yes, I'm thrilled. So let's get to this. So again, we are recording remotely, and we think we've worked out some of the bugs. So hopefully your audio experience is better than last time around, because we still want to offer the highest quality product that we have to give.
We may have also created more bugs. So that's...
Yeah,
that's something
potentially.
That might happen.
Yeah, that's possible.
So we will find that out. But we're thrilled that you're with us, and we can't wait to get back into some things here. So today's film is the classic 1986 black and white indie pick, Down by Law, which was directed by Jim Jarmusch and stars the mighty Tom Waits, John Lurie, and Roberto Benigni are the main three characters in this film. This was my selection. We'll get into that here in a little bit. I brought it to the MacGuffin Guild. I actually had never seen it before. So,
oh, no shit.
Yes, surprisingly.
I thought you were like a fan of it or something.
No, see, I mean, that's not to say I'm not a fan of it, but I've never seen it. I've always wanted to see it, obviously. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm a huge Tom Waits fan.
Right.
So I don't know how this one always snuck past me, but it did, and here we are. But I'm glad that, again, this MacGuffin Guild is giving me an excuse to finally watch all the things in my life that I never had an excuse to watch before. So I'm thrilled that I had the opportunity to bring this film up, and I can't wait to dig into it. So let's first look at the Rotten Tomatoes. Would anyone care to guess what the tomato meter has to say for this film?
Critical.
Justin, Mike?
Critical, I'm going to say high, because I know Jim Jarmusch is kind of... I think he's well-respected critically. Also fan-wise, you know, audience-wise. But for critics, I'm going to say... I'm going to go around 80-ish.
Mm-hmm. Care to guess, Justin?
I usually say the exact same thing that Mike does, but I think this time I'm going to go a little higher and say 92.
Woo! 92 for critic. Mm-hmm. All right, so on the tomato meter, Down by Law, 87%.
Damn.
87. So you're both in the ballpark
there.
Right. It was kind of between
audience
us.
Score. This is where it gets interesting. Audience score. Any guesses?
I'm going to say... I want to say it's a little lower, maybe 72.
Justin?
I'm going to say also 72.
No, 94.
Oh, really? The audience was higher?
Wow.
Yeah, audience is higher, which actually doesn't surprise me, to be honest with you.
Okay.
And I want to get into that a little bit, too, because I totally understand why the audience score is higher than the critic.
Wow.
I totally get it.
I think I get it, too, based on where it was probably shown.
Oh.
And based on the three, well, definitely two of the main three actors have very diehard fan bases.
Yeah.
Really?
That I think are going to be fans of it, yeah, easily.
I know one.
Yeah, Tom Waits, and then John Laurie also has quite a following. He has a history as well.
Yeah, I don't know anything about him, so now, I'm going to learn tonight.
Yeah, Roberto Benigni, he has, I mean, obviously he's been around, but this was his, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple of stats real quick. So rated R, genre says comedy. I don't know, wouldn't strictly call it a comedy. I mean, it.
I don't know. What else would you call it, though?
It's like an...
drama?
It's like
drama,
an art house...
here. Okay.
Dramedy.
Yeah. IMDb says comedy, crime, drama. That makes a little more sense. It's not a comedy by itself, though. I'll tell you that.
No, there's definitely funny bits, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... hour and 46 minutes long. Like I said, Tom Waits, John Laurie, Roberto Benigni, Ellen Barkin's in it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, to give a range of reviews here, obviously a lot of what I'm looking at is positive, so we'll start with the positives, and then we'll go from there. Vadim Rizov from Little White Lies. Hmm. Down by Law is oddly heartwarming, magnifying moments of unexpected camaraderie between kindred spirits who don't immediately ID each other as such.
Hmm.
So we got, this one doesn't have a name attached to it, it just says Time Out, so the publication Time Out. After the initial establishment of character and atmosphere, the laughs come thick and fast, most notably from the marvelous Roberto Benigni.
Yeah, he is the funniest part, for sure. He adds a lot of the comedic element to it.
Yeah. He also has a really powerful voice. Did you notice that?
Oh, yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Like, every time he delivered a line, it's like, oh, man. It wasn't, like, loud. It was just, like, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally.
Such a small man, it's such a big presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the thing, though. I don't know if... it says the laughs come thick and fast. I don't really know if they come that thick. Like, I didn't find myself sitting back...
Sorry.
I didn't find myself sitting back... I mean, take that how you will, but I didn't find myself sitting back, like, just belly laughing through this movie. Like,
that's not the experience I had. I mean, there are some chuckles here and there, but fast and thick? No.
Yeah. So here we got Emma Johnston, Total Film, says mutual irritation merges into grudging friendship, and the wit manages to be both broad and smart, soulful and silly, subtle and ruckus, all at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's a good summary there, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Tim Brayton says, Tim Brayton from Antagony and Ecstasy, every single incident in the film is meaningful.
Hmm.
And I think most people say that about Jim Jarmusch movies in general. That everything has a reason. Every moment has a purpose.
Yeah. I haven't seen many of his films. I am a fan of Ghost Dog, but that's more of... like, that's probably his most accessible movie, I'd say.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you something, because I, again, shame on me, I had never seen Ghost Dog.
Wow, man.
Still, to this day.
I just bought... the Criterion just came out. It's great. Mm-hmm.
How different in vibe, and I know they're two different worlds, Ghost Dog and Down by Law, but is there qualities of Jim Jarmusch that shine through?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
In okay.
Yeah.
How so?
He has his own... he definitely has his own style. If you watch... I mean, because I've seen part of... what's the one with Johnny Depp? Is it a Dead Man or Dead Man?
Dead Man.
Yeah.
Dead Man. I've seen part of that, mm-hmm. and it still has that same kind of feel to it. I'd say Ghost Dog is a little more open stylistically. It's not quite as art house. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in color. Mm-hmm. But it's still got... it still does have that. It's just not as art house, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not like a mainstream, you know, action type of movie, but it's a little bit more like that, mm-hmm. but not. Yeah, there's a little edge to it. I haven't seen the Dead Don't Die, his zombie
comedy. Yeah, I actually recently saw that.
Okay. And I know the general consensus on that one, people don't like it, but I've seen a few people say that it's hilarious, and I have not seen it, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think with that one, and Sarah and I discussed this after we watched it, I felt like we both were looking at each other and we're kind of like, I feel like there was a joke there. Like, you ever someone told a really funny joke that was like...
Mm-hmm. It just like goes over your head?
High level, that just goes over your head. I was like, yeah. I think someone just told a joke that went way over our heads.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because several people said it was hilarious. I mean,
I don't want to sound like a dummy, but I needed that one explained to me.
Yeah, I gotta see it.
I love the cast in that one. I do, and I think my expectations were through the roof for that one, and I think I was kind of in the same boat, Justin. When Amanda and I finished it, I certainly wasn't raving about it, you know? Mm. Like, when you see Bill Murray in anything these days, like, your expectations automatically go to 10. So I was expecting that and didn't really get it. And then, obviously, to have Tom Waits in it as well and Adam Driver and, you know...
It's got a phenomenal cast.
Yeah. Steve Buscemi, Danny Glover.
Yeah, I remember seeing the trailer for it and all the people, and I was like, I have to see this. And then I saw people starting to see it and just shitting on it, basically. And I was like, ooh, maybe I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
But I'll have to see it. But anyway, we're not talking about that movie.
Bring it back to
it's
Jim Jarmusch.
I'm going to tell you guys I didn't actually watch the movie we're supposed to.
Can we just wouldn't talk about shock Mike.
I'm just kidding.
The Jim Jarmusch thing, though, I truly feel with him. And Justin, I know you said you watched some behind the scenes stuff and some features or featurettes, I should say, on from Down by Law.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Correct me if you got the same vibe here. I looked up a couple interviews of him as well after we had spoke, and it seems to me, and you have to respect this, but he made it a point in this one interview I watched that he never wants to have to explain to a viewer what the meaning is.
Hmm.
He wants the viewer to be able to draw from it whatever they see fit.
Yeah,
and he thinks
that.
And he thinks it would be disrespectful for him to tell them, hey, this is what you should be thinking and feeling about this.
Yeah.
You know?
I can respect that. That's cool.
Oh, sure.
You know, and I'm very much paraphrasing, but I think that was the general vibe of what he was saying.
I get, I mean, I've seen brief little interviews with him, not in relation to Down by Law, but, like, through the years I've seen him speak in interviews and stuff. And I get, like, a kind of, like, he's very eccentric, obviously.
You can
probably tell that from the movies he makes, but, almost like a Tim Burton-y weird vibe to him, but in a different way. But also,
well,
some
like Beatnik. Tim Burton meets Beatnik.
Yeah. He's definitely an interesting man, director. I'm curious to see more films of his. I want to seek some more out.
Justin, what was your interpretation of him when you saw the behind the scenes stuff?
I saw a few behind-the-scenes things. I saw stuff from the 80s, like when the movie came out. Like, because I watched it on the Criterion Channel, and then they have all these extras on there, so I stayed up watching those. And then I went on YouTube and watched some interviews later, like the next day or something. But, like, I originally was watching. I was, like, kind of excited because I didn't really know much about him. And I've seen, like, a few of his movies, like Dead Man. I've seen Dead Don't Die. The Johnny Depp one, I fell asleep watching. Like, 10 minutes of it, I fell asleep. I think I got off like working a long shift at work or something. It doesn't matter. But so anyway, I didn't know much about his movies, and I was kind of curious to dig in. And so after I watched this, I watched that interview with him from the 80s, and I just did not get a good vibe from him at all.
Really?
And I was like, I don't know, man. It just seemed like kind of, in my personal opinion, kind of felt like kind of hipstery and kind of like kind of snotty, in my opinion, about stuff. And
like maybe pretentious.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like that. And somebody asked him a question, and I guess he didn't like the question, and he was like, I just don't think that's a very good question. And I was like, that's kind of rude. You could have said that differently. However, with that being said, I watched later interviews with him, like now that he's older, and I think, like, I liked the older him, like, way more. And like just what he's saying, it seemed like he was like kind of more put together. But you think about when he's younger, you know what I mean? And just kind of like you're growing, you're going through things, and I don't know. It's not, first of all, it's not my place to judge him. And then second
puberty?
Of all,
I think all of us have gone. I think single one of us who has dreams and aspirations has had that moment. Now, maybe different levels, but I think it'd be a shame for us not to have some level of this where you can do anything. You can tackle the world. You're the best at your craft. You deserve to be there. You know, now I think sometimes it can go over the top and then it can become cocky. And maybe it was an element of that where he was like, you know, I'm not excusing it. I didn't see it. I'm just trying to rationalize why.
No, I agree. Yeah, I think that's,
you know, I think there's a learning curve. People have to grow up. I think people have to realize, you know, it's a tough world out there and you got to be confident, but you also got to play nice with others.
And it could just be a case of, like, you know, he was so young and inexperienced with the whole interview process and didn't really, you know, he could have been, you know, I'm sure we can kind of relate to this where you can be a little socially awkward, especially if you're put on the spot like that. So, I mean, people have those things. So it could have been something like that. And, you know, maybe through practice, when he started doing it more, he got more accustomed to it and was able to deal with it a lot better. Maybe. Mm. I'm speculating.
All life is just acquiring skills. And maybe, you know, maybe I was expecting him to have a certain level of social skills or something. Whatever it is. But it brought me back to, like, later on, there were some quotes I thought that he said that I thought were really awesome. Ooh. Like, you shouldn't be afraid to fail and trust your instincts and, you know, just these things. And it kind of made me then reflect back on him in those interviews of just being, like, it's just how he was feeling, and that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there was, I thought there was something else about, like, learning through doing type thing. But I think that's, then knowing that, hearing the older him say that, and then looking back at the younger him, I feel like all that was a part of the process of him becoming the person who he is today. You know what I mean? And it's all his mindset of, like, just, like, he has a just do it attitude. You know what I mean? Where I do not have a just do it attitude. So I think it, this coming from a different place, I was like, oh, that's,
he's like,
that's
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. Well, I think it's no different. It's no different than, you know, like a friend of mine that I used to work with would always say, his mother would always tell him, and this shout out to Chuck, Chuck's mom would always say to him, walk into the room like you own the place.
Yeah.
You know, like, regardless of what it is you're doing, I mean, you know, just you want to walk, whether you're going for a job interview or you're going onto a film set to make a movie or you're whatever, you're starting your first day doing whatever, you walk in like you own the place. Now, that can be, it can come across one of two ways depending on your approach. It can come across as, who's this cocky ass that just got here? Or it can come across as, oh, this guy, I feel okay. This guy obviously has been here before, you know? So I think everybody has to go through the trials and tribulations, though, to figure out that balance. How can I have that confidence and not the cockiness?
I agree. Yeah. Because exact opposite. So usually when I see someone come in like that, I'm like, God, get the fuck out of here. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, especially when people have been in that situation, and it's like you have a group of people that have been busting their ass for like 3 months, like getting to where they are, and then someone comes in like, ah, fuck it, look at me, and they're like,
yes.
You're tired. Everybody's been working like 50-hour weeks and stuff, and they're like, you know, haggard, and someone just comes fresh off the street. Yeah. Like, it's just annoying. But again,
I feel you there, Justin.
Different perspectives. One's not wrong, one's not right. It's just, that's life. That goes back to when we were talking about Haosu. I'm forgetting the director's
name.
That's
another good episode you guys should check out.
Yeah. I'm in it.
Me too. Pat, are you in that one?
Were you there, Pat?
I think I am, yeah.
Oh, God, that was some great times. We were so young back then.
Yeah.
Young
and cocky.
Shit.
Yeah.
But, when he was saying about what makes a good story is that difference and that conflict, you know what I mean? Just a minor conflict of things. And, like, you know, they're right there's a story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Someone's been there for 3 months busting their ass doing something. They're worn out. Some other cocky person comes in. Bam, you have a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing about Jarmusch, which is interesting. Okay, so this is a man that obviously takes his craft and his creations very seriously.
Oh, for sure. He's
maybe
an artist.
You can, Yeah, he is. And he apparently owns all the negatives except for maybe one of his films.
Hmm.
And I think for the longest time, I'd have to figure out what the first film was, but I think for the longest time, he managed to avoid studios, major studios.
Okay.
I think he's always been one of those true to the bones kind of artists yeah. that's not willing to bend for anyone, yeah. even if it meant getting three times the budget. He wasn't yeah. just wasn't going to do it.
And I like that.
I yeah, do too.
You have to respect that. Yeah. You have to respect that because that's not, it's not really an act. Like, some people have it, you know, mm-hmm. and he certainly comes across as a person that has it. It's not an act. It's very much in his DNA. But I wanted to talk about, too, some of, apparently, some of his trademarks. I wanted to read through some of these. On IMDb, he has trademarks that they have listed.
Hmm.
Okay. So, frequently cast Bill Murray, Tilda Swinton, John Lurie. You could say Tom Waits for that one, too. I mean, Tom Waits is in at least four or five of his things.
Wow.
Off-screen distant train whistle. So that's something you everybody out there can pay attention to now. How many times you hear that off in the distance.
That's interesting.
Introvert character eavesdrops on two strangers' conversations. You could, I don't know, I guess I'm trying to think of the Roberto Benigni character kind of did that when he first got into the jail cell, but I wouldn't say that he was an introvert by any means.
No.
Salt and pepper hair. I don't know. That's an odd one. But this is the one that I really wanted to hone in on. Stationary camera. This film was all about that lockdown shot. And they would do the trucking shots, the trucking left and trucking right camera as they were like walking along the lake and, you know, they did it in the jail cell, going down all the cell blocks. And
yeah.
So he would do that, but other than that, it was very stationary, the viewers in the room kind of filmmaking. Like, he put me in that cell, and then their conversations, the Tom Waits and John Lurie characters, even before Benigni got there, I found myself, and I'd love to know if this got to you guys as well, but I found myself getting drawn in to the point where I felt like I was just overhearing a conversation of two guys in this position, and I even found myself kind of like smirking at times, you know, like smirking in kind of like enjoyment as I would if I were listening to two people in a room have that same conversation, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it definitely, if that was its goal, it made me feel like I was just observing these guys in this jail cell.
Yeah,
I thought it achieved that. I thought it achieved that well.
I liked their back and forth. Well, I mean, at first, Tom Waits' character, I forget his name. Zach and Jack. Yeah,
but they called him Bob.
I liked how, like, at first, Tom Waits wouldn't even speak to him. And then, like, eventually he found out, you know, Tom Waits was a DJ. He's like, get out of here. And he told him who he was. He's like, that's you? He's like, say something. You know, do like the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And finally he did it. And he's like, you're a DJ? You could do all that? And you haven't said two words to me the whole time you've been here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then they started at this, like, grudging, like, semi-friendship that was very
you know what it felt like to me, like it was like Big Brothers, like, or Brothers,
yeah,
you know, like a,
yeah.
And then when Benigni got there, and this is much very much real, I think if you have two people that are in an awkward situation and maybe it's a little slow going getting their relationship up and getting their conversations going, but then when you introduce a third party, those two people automatically become tighter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
that's exactly what happened. Like, you see those scenarios all the time.
Yeah.
And
you're right.
I think that's what happened when Benigni came in. Then it was like Tom Waits and John Lurie, they were like brothers, lifelong brothers at that point, and they were like just busting on the little brother, Roberto, you know?
Yeah.
So I definitely liked the character interaction between those three. And I did like that Tom Waits had he put up a front at first, and Lurie had to kind of work on him to draw that out of him. And I thought that was
definitely
well done.
I like the rapport between all three of them that like develops, you know, as the film progresses. I like how it plays out the progression of it.
Yeah.
So real quick before we get too deep in this, there's two negatives that I wanted to read real quick. before I lose track of them. Now, obviously, like I said, these the critic ratings, you know, was very high. It was 87%, so there's not a lot of negatives to choose from, but I'll give you the two samples that I have here. One is from Philip Kemp, Sight and Sound. He says, Down by Law seems on occasion to be soliciting our approval. So I don't know, agree or not. I'm not sure if I felt that. But this one got me. This is Pat Graham from Chicago Reader.
He has the same name as you.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Pat's name is Pat. So Pat Graham from Chicago Reader says, On the whole, I've had more fun in Cleveland.
Mm. All right.
I mean, I guess I've had more fun on the whole.
Yeah.
Elaborate on that story, Mike?
No, not really. I'm just going to let that one marinate.
We might get flagged if you do. I don't know.
Oh no.
Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. What is this, when did you first hear about this movie?
My history with this goes as so. Back in, and Justin, you would remember these times, back in about 98-ish, I got a job. Now, you probably started a little before me, but I got a job at Amazon.com. This is when it was still a young, potential, up-and-coming company that maybe could do something. Mm-hmm. And
an online bookstore.
Yeah, an online bookstore. That's what...
And it's funny. They kind of disappeared. Nobody heard of them again. What happened?
Yeah, I know. What could have been?
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's a shame.
Yeah.
So I worked at Amazon, and my boss at the time is a guy named Matt Casarino, who, by the way, he's in a local power duo, is what they call themselves, Hot Breakfast. So definitely look them up. They're a really fun little band. So I worked in the receiving area. He was my boss, and I heard this music. We were allowed to play music at the time. Like, just everybody there was in a band. It was just a whole, like, warehouse full of misfits, and we were all there for one common goal, and it was fun. And, you know, people with mohawks and tattoos, and everybody, you know, like I said, was in a band, and, you know, just was an artist in some capacity. It was just a really great environment to be in. But I heard mm-hmm. this music off in the background, and I was like, what is that? I asked my boss, Matt, what the hell it was. And he told me it was a fella named Tom Waits, who I was familiar with only because he played the voice of Tommy the Cat in the Primus song. Mm-hmm. So I had always seen his name in their album, but I never got around to checking him out. So finally, when I heard the very first Tom Waits song I ever heard that day, was a song called Clap Hands, which is mm-hmm. on Rain Dogs. And the song Jockey Full of Bourbon, which is the song that this film opens to, is also on Rain Dogs.
Okay.
So once I discovered Tom Waits, this was always on my list of I've got to see that movie. And just, you know, 20 years passed and it never happened. But so that was where my love affair with Tom Waits began, because I've definitely, if I were to list like my top three most influential musical acts, Primus would easily be one. Tom Waits would be a solid number two, and Adele would be number three.
Just kidding. Wait, I mean, a solid number two is better than a runny number two, I would say.
Yeah, that's a good point.
No, that's
you ruined your own joke by saying solid number two.
Yeah, you did.
In front
you
of us.
You upstaged yourself unintentionally. Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a damn shame.
You have to consider the maturity level of the people you're telling the joke to.
God. Anyway. Jesus. Yeah, so I've been influenced majorly by him, and I've always wanted to see the film, and then the MacGuffin Guild came along, and I'm like, I'm doing it now. We're going to do it.
Wait, so is there a real number three?
You know what my number three would probably be, and most people probably wouldn't even know who it is? You would probably be able to guess, Mike, who my number three would be.
Is it Skeleton Key?
Yep, Skeleton
Key. Okay. Yeah, check out Skeleton Key.
We saw them up in like North Jersey
one
time.
We
did.
We went
up
there and saw them.
That was a
cool
show.
And they were playing with Stolen Babies.
Storm
or,
babies.
Or as Justin called them, with the Tim Burton jazz explosion. Was that? Tim Burton's jazz explosion.
That's right. I forgot
so,
about that.
Yeah.
Skeleton Key, their bassist and lead singer, the kind of the brains behind the operation, his name is Eric Sanko.
Yeah.
E-R-I-K Sanko. And he is also involved in, he's a phenomenal, like, puppeteer, I guess you would call him.
Oh, okay.
Up in New York. Sanko Puppets. Let me see here. I'm going to bring up the name of that company.
Like marionette type puppets? Or
exactly. In fact, you mentioned Tim Burton. It's almost like a Tim Burton kind of, but darker vibe.
Okay. Oh, okay.
It's not as whimsical. It's more like corpse-esque.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, because I don't know that aspect of him.
It's Phantom Limb Company is what it's called. Mm. Phantom Limb Company. And he makes awesome puppets, and apparently he does stuff like that up in New York. But anyway, that being my number three, which has nothing to do with any of this. But you should definitely check them out.
It has everything to do with
this. We needed clarification on that Adele snafu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway.
For the record, Adele's pretty awesome.
No, I know. I just, that was the one that I pulled out of the air. I was just trying to
that
pull
didn't
something,
fit the rest
something
of the,
out that
yeah.
totally did not fit my vibe, you know?
Well, this is why it's relevant, though, because I feel like this movie, Jim Jarmusch picked, it's all musical influences and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Between, like,
Tom Waits.
I forgot Tom Waits' name. Jesus Christ. And John Lurie, you know what I mean?
Oh, well, let's talk a little, because I want to tap into your guys' experience, too. But real quick, before we go there, now that you guys kind of got a look into my experience with this film, and, you know, when I met Tom Waits, quote-unquote, not in person, but obviously when I was exposed to him, and...
doesn't sound any better.
No, I know it doesn't. When I came to find him... No. Okay. Anyway, my history with Tom Waits. How about that? Now that, you know, I've kind of laid out my history with Tom Waits and how it ties into my need to explore this film.
Tom Waits' body? I don't know where you're going with this.
Anyway, I really want to know what your experience was with this film. Had either one of you seen it before?
No. I'd never even heard of it. Justin? You awake over there, bud?
I am here. I am awake, sort of. Here's what happened. You said, let's watch this, and then I watched it. That was pretty much my history. So before, like, a week ago, I didn't even know anything about it. Oh, actually, you mentioned this a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Back, I think you were discussing doing this or...
The Vanishing, I think.
The Vanishing. Yeah. And we ended up doing The Vanishing, so I'm glad this came back around, because I wanted to see this anyway.
So, my question then, Justin, did you hear of it prior to me bringing it up?
No, never.
Wow. Interesting. Oh, what's that, Mike?
That was Justin.
That was me.
Oh, what's that, Justin?
Get it right.
Yeah, I wish it was Mike, because I don't know what I was going to say.
Oh, okay, that's all right. We can proceed. So, what I want to talk about is, we'll start with Tom Waits. Obviously, you go to IMDb. Tom Waits has 215 soundtrack credits, which is absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
And what's cool about Tom Waits is not only is he a groundbreaking artist musically, but he's also got 45 acting credits as well, which is pretty cool. He's been one of those guys, in my experience, that I don't want to say that he can do no wrong, because he certainly can, but he's so good in his craft of music that when I see him in film, if he didn't even make music, I would appreciate what he brings to filmmaking. Like, he's a good actor. Like Renfield in Dracula, you know, it's just that part was made for him.
I wanted to point that out. Yeah, if you're someone who's like, who's Tom Waits? I don't know who that is. If you've seen Bram Stoker's Dracula and you know who the character of Renfield is, then you've seen Tom Waits.
Yeah, he's just a phenomenal actor on top of being a phenomenal musician.
Mystery Men.
Yeah, Mystery Men.
Well, he was fun in that. Yeah, he did his part.
Rumblefish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's Seven Psychopaths.
He's in the Outsiders.
Seven Psychopaths.
Also,
yeah.
Yeah. He had
Seven Psychopaths. That was good.
He was in the Book of Eli. He was the guy that sold him the batteries.
Oh man, I've seen that movie once. It's been a long time.
The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which was it was Terry Gilliam. That was Heath Ledger's last film.
Oh wow.
Wrist Cutters, Coffee and Cigarettes, which was another Jim Jarmusch movie.
Okay.
You know what's funny? My friend sent me a GIF in a message about that movie, and I was like, he's like, oh, I haven't seen that in such a long time. I got to see it again. I was like, I've never seen it. I got to watch it. And he's like, hey, man, check it out this weekend. And I was like, I will after I watch Down by Law.
For my podcast.
It's just weird because, like, yeah, because it's weird because, like, I don't think anyone's ever, like, recommended a Jim, aside from this and that, a Jim Jarmusch movie since I think Will recommended Dead Man to me, like, years ago whenever that came out.
But see, what do they say? When it rains, it pours, right? They all came in the same week.
Yeah, it comes in threes. What's the third one?
I think I saw part of Dead Man like at Chris Wilson's apartment or something. Like it was,
it was already
playing when I got there. So like I caught like a segment of it or something. I don't really remember much. That, I mean, like I said, that was what 20 years ago or whatever. But like I said, the previous to watching Down by Law, I had only seen Ghost Dog all the way through, and I was already a fan of that movie. Like I actually like that movie quite a bit, so I was excited to check out something else of his.
Yeah, I want to pick your brains a little bit about you, your thoughts on it, but we'll get there in 1 second. While we're just wrapping up the Tom Waits stuff, what I love about Tom Waits, and he's got bit parts in other things like the Fisher King, which is a great movie. So he's always popping up here and there, which is fun. He's been in at least, I would say, 3 or 4 Jim Jarmusch movies, easy. He was in Coffee and Cigarettes. He was in this one, of course. He was in...
The Dead Don't Die?
His first one, wasn't he?
Yeah, The Dead Don't Die. He was in
that.
So, yeah, he's at least been in 3 or 4. Plus, I think Jarmusch did some of his Tom Waits music videos. I think he directed some of his music videos. Tom Waits, for me, with his, and this is one of the main reasons I wanted to watch this film, and I knew regardless, even though I had never seen it before, I knew that I wanted to talk about it on the podcast because I have such a passion for what Tom Waits brings to the table. He is one of the very few, if not the only artist for me personally, where I can literally lose myself in his music. And his music, especially his Island Years, which represents the music he put out between 83 and 93. Some of those albums include Rain Dogs, Swordfish Trombones, Big Time, Frank's Wild Years, The Black Rider. Those albums, they draw me in. Every one of them paints a crystal clear picture of the environment he's trying to put me in. You know, whether it be, you know, the murder in the Red Barn and, or, you know, in the neighborhood, the cemetery polka, like all these things, they literally put me in the music. And then he is also responsible for writing, to me, I feel, the saddest song that was ever written, which is Innocent When You Dream, which that song just crushes me every time I hear it. I have such a respect for what he brings to the table because of what he draws out of me and what he, I mean, he can, like, he just works magic with his music for me personally. And I know everybody's different. And I know some people would hear his voice and be like, who is this carnival barker? What is this stuff? This is just weird. Because he's all about just breaking it down to the core. Like, especially in his more recent stuff. Like, he started playing piano with a kind of like a smooth voice. And then just over time, now he's like he's the Oscar the Grouch of musicians. Like, he's just like this junkyard guy, you know?
Was it you that told me the story about, I don't know if he won an award or something, or he went into a music store or something, and nobody knew who he was? And he was kind of all, like, bummed out about it, and then later on he went to the dump, and everybody knew who he was. Like, hey, it's Tom Waits! Like,
yes, that was actually a story he told, God, probably about 20 years ago now, on the old David Letterman show.
Hey, what kind of places do you go on your field trips?
Well, you know, the most interesting one was that we took all these kids, now I'm talking about 30 kids, to a music store, and I figured, well, okay, I'll drive on that, and then we got there, and and I'm kind of standing over by the pianos, and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to get recognized any minute now. Then I decided to move over by the percussion and found an interesting lighting situation.
You're ready to go.
I'm ready. Yeah. Ready for, aren't you that guy? Nothing.
Really?
I went over by the guitars and I waited. Nothing. I was a little let down.
Yeah, I would think so.
A week later, they asked me to drive on another field trip. This time they're going to the dump. Recycling,
yeah,
and all that.
Sure. Yeah.
12 guys surrounded my car.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Everybody knows me.
Yeah.
At the dump.
Well, sure.
Tom Waits seems like a really funny, really down-to-earth guy. In fact, I've always said this. Look, you guys know I love Les Claypool from Primus. But if you were to offer to me, I could have a beer and a meal with any one celebrity, who would it be? It would be Tom Waits. Like, I always wanted to sit down and have a conversation with that man. And,
well, damn, I would have said Adele.
Yeah, I know. Well, she's my number three, remember. But I think with this story slash analogy that he told on Letterman shows is that he gets it. He understands that even though he's been in the business for a long time, made a lot of music, that most people don't know who he is, even though they encounter him quite regularly. In fact, Justin and I talked about this before the show. Tom Waits wrote the song that is used for the opening of The Wire,
mm-hmm.
Way Down in the Hole. That's a Tom Waits song. And even though he only performed it for season two, the other seasons have people covering his original song. Nobody knows who he is,
kinda like,
for the most part.
Kind of like Downtown Train by Rod Stewart is actually Tom Waits song.
A Tom Waits original,
right,
exactly. Rod Stewart covered the Tom Waits songs, and I think he's happy that way. He doesn't need the glitz and the glamour, but he wants to be the guy that's recognized down in the junkyard. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but that's what I love about him. Anyway, I want to hear, most importantly, what you guys thought, what your initial reactions were to this film, and then I'll give you mine after you guys.
Mike? I figure we'll go to you first before you fall asleep.
Well, like
asleep,
we said,
and then I'll go.
Justin, I'm in the same boat as you. I knew nothing about this movie, never heard about it. And then when Pat picked it, I did look it up just to see who was in it and everything, and the only names I recognized were Tom Waits, Ellen Barkin, and Roberto Benigni. I knew his name, but I don't know anything about him. I just know his name. So I was curious, and again, I wanted to see another Jim Jarmusch film, so I was excited in that respect. And I'm also, of course, not nearly as much of a fan of Tom Waits as Pat is, but I do like Tom Waits for sure, and I respect his influence on so many other artists. I've seen that before. There was one thing I saw where it was just a clip of a bunch of different artists saying who, like, their main influences were, their main musical influence, and so many of them actually said Tom Waits. Like, a slew of them were like, Tom Waits, Tom Waits, Tom Waits. Mm. It was weird. Like, people you know from, like, all walks of musical backgrounds, which I found very interesting that, you know, he's a musician's musician. They all know who he is. So I've always found that fascinating about him. And I do like his music, but I don't, like, I can't. It's not really music you can, like, jam out to, for sure.
No, it's really. Definitely, like, visceral feelings kind of music.
Yeah.
Like,
but, like, what you were saying, he does, his songs really, really put you in there and put you into the story of the songs. You can, you can see it almost like you're reading a story. You see it visually as he's singing the lyrics.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not too many artists can really put you in that place.
Yeah. A Soldier's Things, that's another one that I just thought of. That's just like, it rips my heart out. Like, some of these songs he has are just so gut-wrenchingly beautiful, but painful, because he literally paints these phenomenal pictures with music, and it's pretty awesome. So I highly recommend, before you proceed, Mike, anyone out there who is listening, and I'm sure most of you know who Tom Waits is, but anyone who is listening that does not know who Tom Waits is, look him up and just dive into his stuff. And I highly recommend starting with his Island Years. That's the record label he was on for like the four or five albums right in the middle there that I think is some of his best work. Rain Dogs, Swordfish Trombones, Wild Years.
Most people would say those two, Rain Dogs and Swordfish Trombone, like those who you hear more than any others. Yeah. But go ahead.
And Mule Variations, which is more recent, that one's another good one.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Also, not to be confused with the Tom Waits that was in The Thing that played Windows.
Oh, really? That's his name?
Oh, is there another guy named Tom Waits?
Yeah, I believe his name's Tom Waits also.
Oh, poor guy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up.
I like that guy.
But anyway, so I was excited to check out the movie. Do you want to know my thoughts on the movie? Like, after seeing it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I enjoyed it.
Just get right to the ratings.
Get right to the ratings.
I definitely enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say, like, oh my God, I love that movie. It blew me away. No. But I liked it. It kept me engaged. Like, we were kind of touched on that earlier. I liked the progression of their begrudging friendship that just kind of blossomed as they spent more time in that cell together. And going in, like, the beginning part of the movie, I thought it was going to be a totally different type of movie. I didn't know that they were going to go to prison and that was going to be the bulk of the film. I thought it was just going to be, like, a little slice of life, little crime type of thing. Like, you know what I mean? I thought they were going to go in on some kind of job together or something.
Yeah.
But it didn't turn out that way at all. So I thought that was a neat...
refreshing.
It was a neat aspect.
When, like, you watch a movie and it's like, oh, I know how this is going to go. And it's like, oh, okay. This is cool. Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I mean? Now I can enjoy something, not knowing what's going on.
It went in a totally
different
direction.
I feel like all too common thing that you just see things just fit into a mold.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think Jim Jarmusch does not fit into the typical mold in any way.
No.
I think that's absolutely correct, yeah.
So, real quick, Justin, before you take it, I do want to say, speaking of Jim Jarmusch, the tagline for this film I thought was a really cool one that kind of sums up what you get with this. The tagline is, it's not where you start, it's where you start again.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought was...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was simple, yet very effective.
Yeah.
And I did want to read, Justin, before you pick this up, I do want to read one super reviewer. This was a fan review on Rotten Tomatoes, which I thought was really... I thought it hit the nail on the head.
We love super reviewers.
We do. Jim Jarmusch is the king of cinematic understatement. His films, at least his early ones, are always composed of long takes, nuanced characters, and rambling dialogue, and they never really seem to be headed anywhere. Down by Law is in glorious black and white, courtesy of cinematographer Robbie Mueller, who we need to give a shout out because his stuff is beautiful, and features understated humor at its finest. John Lurie, Tom Waits, and Roberto Benigni are great as Jack, Zack, and Bob, and give us one of the best movie trios of all time. Basically, the film itself is nothing more than the lives of these characters before, during, and after their time in prison, and it's just as enjoyable as Jarmusch's previous effort, Stranger Than Paradise. So I thought that was a neat little review there.
Yeah, I want to see his previous film now, which would be his... I guess that would be his first film, right? This was... Down by Law was his second film? Am I right in that?
Yeah, I think so.
Let me see. I can confirm that in 1 second. while I'm looking that up, though, Justin, what were your thoughts upon first viewing?
So I'm not really familiar with a whole lot of his films, so this was cool to watch this. I saw, like, early on that he got, like, these really high ratings and, like, all this, like, super fandom praise and, like... And then I watched it, I'm like, I enjoyed watching it, but I was like, I don't really get all the praise. Like, I don't get it. You know what I mean? But I felt like the more time I had to digest it, I'm thinking about it more, and I found myself thinking about certain things days later, so that was cool. But I think also it's not really typically in my wheelhouse of things that I'm into.
Agreed. For me.
And I think, yeah, I feel like I was looking for certain things, and it's kind of like when I think some of the movies you watch, like John Dies at the End, where I was like, I didn't really understand what the point was. And I kind of felt like it was just like, okay, these guys get set up during jail, and then it's just them talking to each other in jail, and then they leave, and then they just kind of go about their way. And it just, that's all it felt like to me. And then, but I enjoyed watching that. Like, every time they were talking, I didn't care that it was just three guys in a jail cell talking. Like, I didn't care where it was going. I was just interested in their interactions with each other. And what it made me think about is, I remember I was, like, Sarah and I were just laying in bed one time just talking about things, and we were just kind of talking about, like, these art. I was like, I don't really get these paintings where someone just paints a canvas blue or something. It's like, oh, and everybody's like, oh, wow, this is amazing blue canvas. I'm like, well, you can't even put, like, a little stick figure puppy on it. Like, I don't even know how I'm supposed to be looking at. And then she's like, yeah, but it's like, it's sometimes it's the use of color and how they take that color. And, like, you know, you're just looking at a picture on the internet, but when you're actually standing in front of it and you see how they take that, you know, these colors, like, someone who's an artist would be like, oh, wow, like, the, you know, the way they shade these things or whatever. You know what I mean? She said there's more to it than just, like, you know, it's a painting. And even though there's nothing on the paint, you know, thing except the color, it's what they did with that color. And I think that's kind of a similar thing where I was looking for something like, all right, paint the picture for me. But it was really just the artistic stew of things. It was like the interaction between them. And it goes back to, like, even just saying, like, how Jim Jarmusch is like, I'm just going to do what I want to do. Like, it's like, you know, I'm not going to fit into the mold. And, like, and, you know, and ultimately it was just refreshing. And also, just to keep going on my rant, when she told me that, it made me think about music. Like, some music I listen to, and people are like, what the hell are you listening to?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but I just listen to that guitar tone. Or, like, yeah, listen to how that bass and the guitar just, like, really kind of, like, sound good together. Like, it's just, like, one or two notes, but, man, it's really, like, something, you know? Yeah. So I just think this is kind of, like, I'm on early steps of picking up something I didn't really understand before. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about going on a new journey.
No, that's cool. But I will say this, I agree with you fully that upon first viewing, I definitely felt like I didn't get the payoff I was hoping for.
Yeah.
It felt like something was lacking. But what I did take from it, and I truly believe, and I don't know, I haven't heard him say this, but my assumption is Jim Jarmusch had an opportunity to get these guys in a room together, Tom Waits, Benigni, and John Lurie, and literally let the talent just kind of, like, naturally interact and happen.
Yeah.
And I feel like there was a lot of that in this. And I think because of that, he wasn't, there was no end game. There was no, hey, here's the three story parts, and here's where the, you know, this is going to be the second act, and this is what they're going to do to get out of it, and this is going to be the happy message at the end. There was none of that. You know, I do think that I felt a little let down that there wasn't a little more of that, but the joy that I did get from this film was two things mainly. One, it was beautifully shot in a very simplistic way. And what that also did, it allowed the actors to just be. And it made me feel like I had touched on earlier, it made me feel like at times that I was literally observing real life. I wasn't watching a movie. I was sitting in a cell with these guys. And I was getting to know them. And I was witnessing their first interactions together. And I liked that he just kind of let the scenes breathe. We've talked about it before. Who was the filmmaker? I think it was on Living in Oblivion. Director Tom DiCillo. He said you could have the best camera work, sweeping shots, explosions, fireworks, the whole thing, but the acting is stale. You have nothing. Or you can have one lockdown camera in a room with two phenomenal, you know, an interaction between two phenomenal actors, and you have a scene. And I felt like he was, whether it was intentional or not, I think he was bringing this thing down to its root, down to the core, and just, it was almost like watching a stage play. You know, it was so, like, the camera angles were so simplistic, And the scene, the takes were very long. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't a lot of cuts.
To me, it's like the Tarantino effect, where he kind of lets the scene play out. No matter how long it goes on, it goes on as long as it needs to.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And I think he did a good job with that. I do wish that... Because I started to feel excited, like when the Benigni character gets introduced, and then I see their rapport start to develop, and then Benigni just, you know, kind of willy-nilly says, oh, by the way, I know how to get out of here. You know, like...
Yeah.
And I'm okay with the fact they didn't show the jailbreak. I'm mm-hmm. fine with that. In fact, you know, we could talk about that later as that potentially being a MacGuffin. But what I was hoping for, that even as they were then on the run and trying to get far away from the jail, I was just hoping for just something else, just something a little extra to kind of like give me that closure, which there was closure. Maybe that's a bad word, but just I just wanted something else. I felt like something was lacking.
It's the old adage. It's about the journey, not the destination.
Yeah, yeah. I think this movie fits that bill
perfectly. Although, I mean, the Benigni character gets a resolution. I mean, it's assumed he's going to stay where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
But the other two guys just kind of go off out into the world with a new perspective, basically. So, I mean, there is closure, for sure.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the exact point where I realized how much I cared about these characters is after they escape from prison. Mm. And, you know, they're doing this thing together and they're all running away. And then they get to the river. And then Bob's like, I can't swim. Mm. And then they're just like... All right, later, Bob. And they just take off and leave him. I felt my heart drop. Like, how do you just fucking leave Bob? Like, you got to go down together.
Bob is the reason you're there. Yeah.
And they just like, and that scene went on for a while where it's just Bob talking, like, you know, just speaking to himself in Italian, and you hear the dogs coming closer, and you maybe probably hear a train whistle in the background.
Yeah.
And then like. And you're like, what the fuck? Are they going to capture him? Like, what's happening?
Yeah, I thought the cops were going to show up. I thought they had
him. He thought so, too.
This sucks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then when you see, right as it sounds like they're there, and you see Tom Waits grab him, and he's like, Zach! Yeah. And then, like, and he swims off with him. It was like, oh, man. Like, I was like, oh, I guess I really can't. I'm, like, fully invested in these characters.
See, but
when
you look at those moments, he did do a good job of letting these characters in a short amount of time develop some kind of connection that we then felt a connection to. So there's definitely something there. But I just think, just to wrap up my previous point, I guess I wished at the end, and I get it, there was closure and there was new beginnings and that stuff. But I don't know. I guess I was just looking for the...
No, I do feel like there's... It just feels like something's missing. Because even though every scene leading up, and I like all the scenes, like when they get to that little... restaurant rest stop thing, and then they're like, all right, go ahead, you know, we'll wait for you right here, and they're like, oh, he just walked in there like an idiot
in his prison uniform. I'm like, I think he'd take them off,
and then they're waiting in the bushes, and I'm still enjoying all this, but I'm like, where's this even going? And then they're like, go in, and like, oh, everything's okay, and it just seemed like a weird, like, everything is just weird. It's like, oh, you just walked in and everything was okay, you know, and then it's like, okay,
so but I think that's just Bob, like. He just seems like everybody likes him for whatever reason. You know, he's just a likable guy.
Yeah, and very naive.
Even though he killed someone.
With an eight ball.
So.
A billiard ball, not a bag of dope.
Not an eight ball.
So, Benigni, do you guys know the actress that was in that little diner that he went to? Do you know who that is?
No.
Well, that's his wife.
Yeah, I knew that.
Well, his future wife.
So they met on this movie and then got married, right?
I don't even know if that's the case. Did they meet on this movie?
I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. I read that they got married like 5 years later. And I think they're in a lot of movies.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, Nicoletta Braschi, Braschi. They were married in 1991, December 26th. Braschi, how do you say that?
I said Bronski. That's not... I'm just being stupid.
Jeez. So, Benigni was a... He was an Italian actor, I do believe. Is that correct,
Justin? Yeah, this was his first, like, English-speaking role, I believe it's a...
Yes. Yep. His very first English-speaking role. And, in fact, his lack of English knowledge in the film was very much real.
Okay.
And I heard somewhere that Tom Waits and John Lurie actually, I'm sure it was out of like a brotherhood, but busted his balls a lot and played a lot of pranks on him because of his lack of the English language. That'd be kind of funny to see some of that, but but anyway,
yeah.
What is your knowledge with Benigni? Is there anything specific with him that you remember in his career?
No, I just know his name. I know nothing that he's in.
He's the guy that jumped up on the chair, isn't he?
That's right. I wanted to see if either one of you would pick that out.
I don't know.
That's me as an accomplished film student. He's the guy that jumped up on the chair because of some movie he won an award for.
Yeah, he won an Oscar for, I think it was for an, I think it was an acting Oscar, but I can double check that. But yeah, after he won, he jumped up on the chair in front of him, and it's like really iconic. That's the first place I
know nothing about that.
I'm pretty sure I only know that because you probably told me that. I was like, oh yeah, I remember that
he
guy.
He gained international recognition for writing, directing, and starring in the Holocaust comedy drama Life is Beautiful, for which he received the Academy Award for Best Actor, the first for a non-English male performance. And best international feature film.
I never thought I'd hear that genre of film ever in my life.
Oh yeah, what was it? It was Holocaust comedy drama. Oh yeah, that's rough. What I wanted to look up, there was a film he did when he was in Italy. I was trying to find the name of it, but I can't find the name because I don't know how to speak Italian.
Was it called Pizza Pie?
Oh my God, Mike. I guess you could say that because you're Italian.
Yeah, I'm part Italian.
But he did a film in Italy where he was a movie reviewer that refused to watch the movies first. I thought that was great. I'm like, oh, Mike could relate to that based on the Vanishing episode.
Oh, yeah. Hey. That's awesome. Man, find out what that is. I watched
one of two of them.
Yeah, you're batting 500. Roberto Benigni's Rabbit Soliloquy was almost entirely self-written and improvised based on his own life experiences. His mother actually did raise rabbits.
Oh, wow.
Which, by the way, was the rabbit in that movie real? The one he came running into the scene with?
I don't
know. Dude, it looked real.
If not, that was one hell of a fake rabbit.
It may have been.
Roberto Benigni's line, "It's a sad and beautiful world," was the result of a misunderstanding. The script read, "That's sad and beautiful music," but Benigni said, "It's a sad and beautiful word."
Oh, and then Tom Waits read that. Yeah, I read that.
So then Waits and Jarmusch misheard it. They thought he said world, and then the line stuck.
Nice.
And Benigni had never been to America prior to this film. Not only had he not been in an American film, he had never even been to America.
Well, it seemed like he had a good time, so that's cool.
I thought this was cool, too. I'm on IMDb now. Yeah, this is the cheap way out, but whatever, you know. Producing a podcast is difficult, so sometimes you got to cut corners. But anyway, Jim Jarmusch had intended for the shack that the fugitives find refuge in after escaping prison. He envisioned that it would have bunk beds so as to make it look exactly like the prison cell. Incredibly, they found a shack where two bunk beds were already standing, so no extra furniture had to be added. Isn't that pretty cool?
No shit. Yeah, did you pick up on that fact that the bunk beds, it looked exactly like their cell?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I totally.
Yeah, okay. They finally have freedom and they're in a cell, not getting fed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was great. Yeah, and then they had the fear of alligators. So it's like, what would you rather have?
Yeah. They said something funny. Something about the alligators. Oh, I didn't write it down. Oh, I did write down at some point somebody says, Mr. Almighty Hot Shit.
Oh,
I thought
it
was pretty good.
Huh.
I think I was back when they were in jail. All right. Oh, and there's also Mr. Bill. On the graffiti, there was a Mr. Bill on the wall. Remember Mr. Bill from the
80s? Oh, yeah, really?
I think he was from, like, the claymation guy. Yeah, there was, like, a Mr. Bill, and it said Mr. Bill above it. And I was like, is that really the Mr. Bill? And then I saw a little word bubble. That said,
I missed that one.
The word bubble? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Hmm.
I thought you'd pick that up for sure, Pat.
No,
with your eagle eye.
I overlooked that one. So, apparently, this is the only Jim Jarmusch film made with American money, quote unquote, as he calls it himself. He says that he prefers not to have his films funded by Americans because there are too many strings attached.
I read that and I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then it said, oh, this is the first film. And it's like, but it's a second movie, isn't
it? It's his third.
It's like 50% of his movies at this
point. No, it's actually his third. I just looked it up. It was.
So 33%.
Oh, Permanent Vacation, Stranger Than Paradise, then Down by Law. But he did Talking Heads, video short. He did, well, a couple of them. Tom Waits, music videos and whatnot. Neil Young. So he's done some music videos and whatnot. So that's cool. Anyway, real quick. So that's Benigni, Tom Waits, and then John Lurie. Let's talk about John Lurie. John Lurie is a musician, actor, and painter. In 1978, he formed the Lounge Lizards Jazz Ensemble with his brother Evan, and the band made music for 20 years. Lurie has also composed scores for films and a soundtrack for Get Shorty, and was nominated for a Grammy Award. He had starring roles in Stranger Than Paradise, this film. In the early 90s, he wrote, directed, produced, and starred in a TV series, Fishing with John. Do you know what else he wrote, which I thought was really interesting? He wrote the theme song from the original Late Night with Conan O'Brien.
Oh,
yeah, oh really?
Him and another guy, Howard Shore, I believe, wrote the theme song together.
Oh, I know
together.
Howard Shore, yeah.
Howard Shore?
I'm pretty
really?
Sure it was Howard Shore.
Are you sure it was Shore? Are you sure, Shore? Howard Shore is a composer.
But yeah, it was Howard Shore. Howard Shore and John Lurie wrote the
Interesting.
The opening theme for Conan. And that's the one, you guys all know that. Maybe I'll plug it in, but I'll try to sing it real quick. It's the one that goes, ba-da-da-da-da, ba-da-da-da-da-da. Remember that one?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, that was right. Yeah, that's the one I think of.
It was that one. So anyway, thank you.
That's
maybe I don't have
episode.
To put it in post.
That's good. No, sorry. No, that was good.
How'd that go again? One more time.
I know how sometimes like people are like, oh, it's this song. Here, let me try to sing it for you. And then it sounds nothing like the song.
I was trying
to not allow that to happen.
I've done that before. And then I rise halfway through them, actually turned it into a different song. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, wait.
Goes, no, wait.
And like,
that's
no,
that's
it goes
song.
Like this.
Like, oh, you're right.
Dun, 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 dun. Are you sure that's it, Pat?
And I'm like, no, wait. And I back it up, and it's like, and I just do it again. I'm like, why can't I just, I can't hear it in my head. Sarah said one time when she was riding her bike, she was like somewhere, I think it was when she was living in Rhode Island, she was riding her bike and some jokester like was behind her, and he had one of those CB radios that has like the speaker under the hood. So you can like say stuff into the CB radio and that guy goes out. So I guess he saw her and he saw her and he like got it and I guess tried to do the Wicked Witch of the West. Yeah. Music, but ended up doing the Batman theme. And I think she said she looked at him and saw, and like he realized that he was doing the wrong thing. He was like, nah, 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 nah,
nah. I'm sure she's like, yeah. She starts pedaling faster.
Yeah.
She was all like, I am the night.
Yeah.
I am the night. Yeah, and she disappears in the darkness. Right.
Oh, God.
Here's something that's pretty interesting. One thing I like about this, so it's like basically Tom Waits or Jim Jarmusch was like, I'm going to make a movie just with my friends in mind, which is apparently what he does. So all these guys are like of like-minded people, but they all seem to have their hands in multiple different things. I like making movies. I like, you know, music. And they're like all these interests. And even Jim Jarmusch said that he's a self-proclaimed dilettante. You know what I mean? He's into like a bunch of different things. And that made me feel really good because I feel like I'm into so many different things sometimes. I'm like, I wish I could just focus on one thing that I could just be good at. And I always thought of that as a negative thing. But it's good to see him taking that and molding all these things together, like, which makes him unique. Is like you could take all these different interests and put them together. And it made me feel good about myself being all over the place with things.
Yeah,
so, and it seems like those other people are like-minded, you know.
I'm definitely with you on that. I mean, I'm all over the place with my interests and with things I want to do or things I did do, but then stopped doing and then started doing something else.
I think that the key is just keep on doing it. You know what I mean? We're like, I'll get sidetracked by something, never come back to the other
thing. True.
I think you just gotta.
That's
plow
why this
through.
Podcast is a good thing because we're keeping it going. We're keeping it rolling. Despite all of our technical difficulties we've been having lately.
Yeah.
Technical setbacks over the last month.
It's weird times to try to have a podcast socially distanced and responsibly. Yeah. We'll get through it. All right, so that's Lurie. Oh, and then interesting with John Lurie, what ended up happening, so he was a musician for all these years, and then I guess he got Lyme's disease.
Ooh.
So he had to give up music, apparently.
Ugh.
And I think he then turned to, I think he's an artist. I think he still does, like, you know, fine arts.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah. He was a painter or something.
So yeah, he's still out there and still making art, but he just different format.
Well, good for him. That's awesome. Yeah. We never mentioned Ellen Barkin.
Oh, yeah, Ellen Barkin.
Which, like, I don't really know much about Ellen Barkin because it seems like she's more in movies that I don't typically watch. She was in The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which I know that one, and I saw a few other things that she was in, I know. Anyway, but most notably, in 2010, she was in a movie called Shit Year, which seems like it was 10 years ahead of its time.
It was really called that?
Shit Year?
Shit Year,
oh,
yeah.
Wow, Shit Year, yeah, I see it.
Shit Year, I see it.
Yeah, that looks kind of cool. I who's Cam Archer? That's the director and the writer.
Ooh. Hmm.
I'll have to check out Shit Year.
Yeah.
We're living,
I mean,
it.
We're living
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, God.
But anyway, she was great in it, by the way, too. Her, when they were fighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I felt like I've had that fight mm-hmm. before. And the feelings I had, I was like, ugh, this is ugly.
Yep, 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 yep.
Like, it was like.
Been there.
Yeah, it's like someone who's so mad at you.
Yeah, so she was also in Sea of Love, The Fan. It was at De Niro and Snipes.
That's the De Niro and Snipes one, yeah. I think there's another movie called The Fan, so.
Drop Dead Gorgeous, This Boy's Life, Ocean's 13.
Oh, The Big Easy. She was in, what was the one with Lance Hendrickson, wasn't she? Oh, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. That was the
other. Oh, yeah, with Lance Hendrickson.
Oh, yeah.
I saw on her credits list. Not with Lance Hendrickson. Oh, Johnny Handsome was the movie I was thinking of.
I've never seen that.
Oh, yeah, I haven't even looked at any of my notes yet. Here, let me zip off some of my Pat's points. Justin, you want to hit me with a theme?
Pat's points.
All right. So, Down by Law. Here's some of my notes here. I'm just going to zip through them. So, opens with a Tom Waits song. We already talked about that. Not the shoes. I like that during that fight, he was just worried about not his nice shoes.
Yeah, that's the only thing he cared about.
So, both of the characters were framed.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Waits was framed with a body in the trunk. He was offered $1,000 to drive a vehicle across town or whatever and got pulled over.
That was one thing. I wasn't exactly sure what the motivation was for someone to frame him.
I got the impression. Yeah, I don't know. What I gathered.
Yeah, the other guy, clearly you understand why he was framed, but.
Yeah, clearly. He was into some heavier shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I guess Tom Waits had to be into some stuff. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know exactly what the motivation was either. In any case, they got him both. Yeah. The other guy, they got him with a young girl, so that was a little skeevy.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, with his rival played by Rocket's Red Glare.
That was... notice the creepiest part of that whole scene, though? After he gets arrested for the, you know, the young girl. Did you notice the cop gets into the bed with the little girl?
Oh, yeah, what was that about?
Yeah, he was a total creepazoid.
I think it's implied that he's gonna do something. It was a little... Yeah.
I kind of got that vibe, but I think he was trying to comfort her.
It was awkward.
It came off as a very awkward. Yeah, if he was trying to comfort her, he was doing a shitty job.
I feel like it was someone who has zero paternal instincts trying to comfort someone who he knows needs to be comforting that just comes off here.
I hope that's the case.
Or he just might have been a
pedo. It could have been either way.
Yeah, but I know what you're saying. I picked that up too.
It could have been a case of Jim Jarmusch trying to portray, like, you know, the cops are just as bad in, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah, exactly. Like, they were, that was, I felt grimier about that guy than I ever did about John Laurie's character.
Yeah, for sure.
Jack.
Yeah, so all the prison outfits had it said Orleans Parish Prison, OPP. So they all had OPP on there. I did, one note here I do have, it says, one hell of a prison fight, LOL. That was,
the slap fight?
Yeah, that was...
I love that
fight. Yeah, I mean, I did enjoy how when they cut back, they were both sitting there kind of curmudgeon-y with black eyes. I liked that,
but the fight
itself was just like a little like... It didn't really grab me as being realistic.
You can tell
realistic.
They didn't like choreograph that or anything.
Nah.
It was just like, all right, slap at each other a little bit.
Yeah.
They apparently got mad at Jim Jarmusch for using that cut because they were expecting like a Hollywood like brawl type fight. And he's like, no, I like this. This is more real. This is how like shit talking people fight. You know what I mean? Because if you look at him, like John Laurie looks like he's about 80 pounds soaking wet and he's about my height. You know what I mean? And neither one of them looks like a tough guy, but they act tough. And usually when you see those guys that are real skinny acting tough, usually when they start fighting, they're like throwing chops at, like,
slaps at you. That's a good point. Oh, that's cool. That made me like it a little better, that it was more real. Yeah, you got all these shit talkers in prison, and then they just, like, go to slapping. Although, I will say this, Benigni, did he really have those hiccups? Because they were pretty top-notch if he was faking those hiccups.
Oh, those were great hiccups. Oh,
yeah, they acted hiccups. They may get the award for the greatest acting hiccups in the history of film.
Best on-screen hiccup.
In an independent film.
Yeah, so I have a note on here, which is interesting. So the beginning of the film, for me, felt a little disjointed. I got what they were doing. They were introducing these characters, but a little of it felt forced to me. Like, again, it felt to me like he was just, like, letting the characters, like, letting Tom Waits be Tom Waits, you know? But anyway, so it was a little slow going for me in the beginning of trying to, like, feel the connection and clicking into it. And I have a note here that says, for me, it starts to feel right at the scene where they're standing at the bars in jail and Benigni's telling the pool ball story. That, to me, is where the connection really started to be made, where I felt, I started feeling good about what was happening. It was a little slow going, and probably the first 15, 20 minutes, it just wasn't clicking for me.
Agreed.
Yeah, the all scream for ice cream. That was, I thought that was funny. Look, it was obnoxiously annoying there for a hot minute, but then I thought it was hilarious that even when they reached their crescendo and then stopped, all the prisoners off, you know, off screen, you could hear them over shout. Like, I was like, that made it real. That, you know, like this chaos busts out in a prison about some horse shit. And then other prisoners just kind of like...
Because no one has anything better to do.
Yeah, they just kind of join in with the chaos, even though they're screaming about ice cream. I thought that
it
was funny.
It just gives them something to do, yeah.
Yeah, trucking shot along the river, I like that. You know, he used that cinematography a lot, just following them along the river. I thought that was gorgeously done. I like the candle... lighting the candle effect in the cabin. I love... It was almost like you see it on, like, sitcoms, where you light... They light the match, and as soon as the candle lights, like, all the walls light up with, like, artificial lighting.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I thought it was cool looking, but, you know, it was, like, clear that that candle was not putting off all of that light.
Sure.
But it was well done.
You know what I really liked about that scene?
You couldn't tell where the light was coming from.
What I really liked about that scene is, do you remember earlier when Bob's trying to get a cigarette and he's finally like, here's a cigarette, but don't ask me again. And then he's trying to get a light and he's like, yeah, we can't have that in here. We can't have fire in here. Then once they get out in the wild, they have a whole box of matches there, but that's after they already go through the water. Do you think they have any dry cigarettes on them? So now they have the fire and no cigarettes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that's really cool.
Just also showing that being still stuck in prison even after you escape. It's just the other side of it. Whether that was intentional or not, I thought it was cool.
No, that's neat. That never even hit me. So that's a really good good little nugget.
The only reason it hit me is I quit smoking 10 years ago, and the entire time I just wanted a cigarette watching them smoking the whole time.
Three more real quick notes for me, and then we can move on to our ratings and any final thoughts. There was an awesome shot outside of Luigi's Tin Top, which was a little restaurant or diner, whatever you call it, little bistro. Awesome shot through the bushes where the Bob character went in and Zach and Jack were outside. I thought that was really exceptionally choreographed. It was
filmographed.
A very beautifully... filmographed. It was very beautifully shot. Very simplistic, but the composition was nice. It was a nice looking shot. So anyway, I just wanted to note that. Pay attention to the bush shot. So, the one line where Zach says, Bob, it tastes like a tire, when they're eating the rabbit.
Oh, yeah.
I like how feed him. How Bob feeds them, and they're just busting his balls. Like, again, like big brothers to a little brother.
Yeah.
It's disgusting, Bob. It tastes like a tire. Meanwhile, I'm sure they were thrilled to have it because they were starving. Yeah. One more final thought about Jim Jarmusch that I wanted to mention was that apparently he likes to see his films once with a paying audience that doesn't know he's there, and then never again. I guess he wants to get a feel for what the people, people that have paid to be there, and then he doesn't want to watch his work anymore. So anyway, Justin, did you have any thoughts that you did not get a chance to touch on?
Not just little things like I thought it was cool when they got in the boat that Zach picked up the life jacket thinking about Bob and remembering he couldn't swim. So I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah. That's awesome. Totally went over my head, but that's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, I watched some deleted scenes that were kind of cool, too. Like, there were some deleted scenes where, like, Jack actually gets roughed up or something. He comes back and his face is all beat up. And then, and there's this whole thing with him being kind of squirrely. Like, after that, like, talking to himself and going a little weird. And there was a couple scenes like that, even up until when they separate in the woods and he's talking to himself, he gets really, like, it's a shame that some of these parts were cut because they were really good, but I think they just didn't want to go down that angle of him like his cheese sliding off his cracker. But which I don't know, I think it would have been pretty good, but you know.
So wait, which character? That was the John Laurie character?
John Laurie character, yeah. He starts getting like real like talking to himself and like he's like, oh, I gotta make phone calls and I got like and then yeah, he starts to get a little like after he gets his ass kicked real bad and he's like laying in bed and it's like blood running out of his mouth and stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah. And what else? There was an alternative ending where it shows Bob and the girl in bed just kind of laying there enjoying themselves like smoking a cigarette.
Nicoletta.
Yeah, and then it shows the other two guys like walking farther down the path, their paths, and then you hear the dogs and stuff again. You know,
damn.
like they're always just going to be on the run, maybe or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty good.
That would have been the ending I was looking for, like just something else. Just
yeah,
that would have been cool, just to leave you like, oh shit, it's not over. You know?
Yeah, that's all I remember. That's all I got.
All right, so Mike, any final thoughts?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything. Like, I got all the points I wanted to get out. All
right, so let's rate this mother. I will begin, since it was my selection. And, I mean, I pretty much gotten all my thoughts out there. I don't really need to reiterate anything. I'm going to go higher on the scale, but not as high as I wish I could have gone. I'm going to kind of go 7.2. So I'm up there, but with room for improvement, I felt. And I know that's harsh. I know a lot of people were like, you know, I mean, oh, it's great cinema. I think this is like one of the 1,000 films you should watch before you die.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I enjoyed
it. It's personal opinion.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, yeah, it's, so your rating is yours, and that's why you do it. It's kind of given, it's not given a baseline of. I feel like our ratings aren't what we would grade a film. It's where it falls on our level of stuff that we enjoy. So I think giving a higher or low rating means nothing as far as the quality of the film as much as it does as our personal takeaways and our experiences.
Yeah, so 7.2
for me. That
being said,
7.2 is fucking stupid, Pat. You want to give it another shot? Let's try this again from the top.
No. We'll just
no. I think 7.2 is pretty good. That's honestly probably right around where I'd put it too. To be honest with you.
Well, then go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, 7.2. like I said, I started watching it, and I think I even told you before, like you know, a day or two ago when we were kind of talking about this, I was like, I kind of feel funny because I like to focus on the things I like, and I like to try and be more positive about things. And I was like, I don't know if I want to talk about this because, like, I was watching those interviews and I got kind of a douche vibe off of Jim Jarmusch or something. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't want to say that and I don't want to be negative about it. But I'm kind of glad I kind of talked about it because then it kind of made me realize this whole journey through life and just about who he is and what he does. And I think that's all part of it. And it's like, I think that, you know. And I think watching this when I was like, what's the point? And I'm like, I'm enjoying watching these people. But I think really that's the point of the movie. It's this relationship between these guys. And I think a lot of people have been
that
there.
That is
like,
the point.
Yeah, that's the whole point. It's this relationship between these guys that it's like, do you ever have a job where you hate being there and like you don't know how you ended up there and all these other people, they're like, I don't know how I end up here. And you form these like, you know, these strong relationships are forged in fire, not built. You know
alliances
what I mean?
Under like stressful situations.
Yeah, and you end up with friends you never thought you'd have.
I know exactly what that's like.
And then, and here we are. No, but but we've all been there, and it's kind of cool, man. And it's and I like that. And I think like to speak on Jim Jarmusch's behalf. I think Jarmusch. I'm probably saying it wrong the whole time.
Yeah, I think I am too.
Yeah, I think his message, which is a good message, people should know is don't be afraid of failure and just do your thing and follow your instincts. And these are all things from his mouth he said in interviews. And one thing I thought was really cool, I wrote down, he said, it's hard. I can't read my own handwriting, but we'll assume that this is exactly spot on what he said.
He said, quote unquote, it's hard.
It's hard. Life's hard. Give up. No. It's hard to get lost if you don't know where you're going. And I thought that was awesome. And I think that's about his style of just like, which also ties into something he said, is editing tells you where the film wants to be, where you're like just doing all the stuff. And then when you take it into editing and you're just watching, you're like, oh, this is the film that's happening. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, sure.
All these things are cool.
Pat can definitely relate to that one with the editing aspect.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I don't know. I'm excited to watch more of his films and be a little more... I like that I kind of went in being like, oh, this guy. And I'm like, you know what? I like this guy, so...
Mm. I kind of... Cool. Yeah, Justin, I was kind of on the same page with you with that, for sure.
Well, that's good, Mike. So, do you have...
I'm used to copying Mike, and now he's copying me. I didn't know what to do. I was, like, dumbfounded.
Let me write these down. Of course, I don't have the MacGuffin database in front of me, so... 7.2. I'll have to plug this in later, get our overall average. But Mike, what do you think? Rating for the film?
I'm going to go a little bit lower than you guys, but not severely so. I'm going to go 6.8.
Okay.
Only because I definitely enjoyed the film, and I it's just kind of where Justin was saying, like, it's not in his wheelhouse. Yeah, it's not my cup of tea, per se. Mm. Not to say that it's bad at all. I actually liked it. I think the best aspect of it was the three leads in the film. If it weren't for them, I would have probably jumped ship on this movie, honestly. Mm-hmm. But those performances were strong enough, and I don't feel the same as you do about the ending, per se, because I think, like I mentioned earlier, it's about the journey, not the destination.
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it.
I mean, I'm okay with that in some instances, and I think it works okay in this movie for me. But 6.8.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say one more thing, again, with me changing my opinion. As I was watching it, and I was like, I knew he had his friends in mind when he made it. And at one point, I kind of was like, I feel like it kind of falls apart. Not falls apart. This doesn't fall apart. But I kind of felt it lost me a little bit towards the end because I was like, I think he was just letting his friends play too much and he wasn't, like, didn't want to rein them in enough. Did you think that too?
I think you just encapsulated the point I was trying to make about the beginning of the film.
Oh, okay.
Where he was just letting Tom Waits do what Tom Waits does. He was letting his, like you just summarized it, he was letting his friends just do what they wanted to do and he wasn't reining them in. I totally felt that in the beginning of the film. Absolutely. So, yeah, you just encapsulated my thought in a much better way.
Yeah, I felt that. But then I watched an interview with John Laurie where he was talking about, like, things that he didn't want cut, and then they ended up fighting over it. So, I was like, well, interesting. So maybe he had to pick his battles, and maybe he was just like, all right, I'll let this shit slide so that we could just, like, you know, not kill each other, even though they'll probably... love each other after they're done. You know how it is when you...
Well,
love,
they continue to work with each other. Yeah. So, all right. So normally in our show here, this would be the phase that we would transition over to the MacGuffin portion. And as many of you probably already know, a MacGuffin is a plot device used to drive along a story in film. And we like to use the film itself as a MacGuffin to drive along our conversation. But... unless you guys have any specific questions, I mean, we spent a hell of a lot of time talking about this film. I think there was a lot to unpack, and I thought it was great.
Yeah.
But I don't really have any specific questions to dwell on, because, you know, it's not like I'd be like, hey, Justin, what was it like last time you were in prison? You know.
Has anyone ever been in Turkish prison? Prison? Yeah. I can't talk. Turkish prison? Jesus Christ.
I was in detention once or twice, maybe, I think, but...
I know, right?
Yeah. But I was set up, to be fair, so there you go.
There you go.
I was an innocent man.
I've never been, like, arrested or detained or anything like that in any way. Have you guys?
I have not.
Justin, you're awful quiet.
probably not. I don't think so.
Probably not.
I feel like I remember police telling me not to go somewhere. Yeah,
do
I
not
don't know.
Pass
I
go.
I
do not collect $200. Was
yeah.
that it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's say we made our own version of this film. Like some mm-hmm. really, like you think this is an independent film. Like we just do this in your basement. Out of the three of us, and we played the three people in the movie, who would play who, do you think?
Pat would be Tom Waits. I would be Benigni.
Yeah, that one's clear.
Yeah, that was like, yeah with hands down, you would just be Benigni, hands down.
yeah, that one's crystal clear. Yeah, between Justin and I, though, that one's tricky. I could see us flip-flopping
those
characters.
I could see that going either way. Yeah, it could. Yeah. It could. The two of you are kind of, in those roles, you would be interchangeable, I think. Either or.
But yeah, I was kind of stuck on that, too. I couldn't think about it. And then I was like, at first, I was like, I think you would be the John Laurie one. Only because I feel like John Laurie was the more, he had his shit together more. You know what I mean? I felt like he was the one kind of steering the ship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And but then once I saw those deleted scenes, and then later on when they're in the thing and Tom Waits is the one, or Zach, you know, is the one where it's like, and he's like, who put you in charge? And he's like, this is just how it is. And then John's like, okay. Or Jack's just like,
yeah,
okay. And it just goes along with it. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe, you know, you would probably be the Zach and I'd be the Jack and he'd be the Bob.
let's do it. Let's film it. We'll just do a short sequel. We'll just do a short little bit of it in the prison cell.
Yeah.
And just test it out. See what happens.
It'll be Mike gagging on a cigarette for 20 minutes.
Oh, I'm glad you said cigarette, because I thought you were going somewhere else.
Something else. I thought this was going somewhere else.
Down by the deep cut.
I mean, if that's the way you guys want to go, I mean, you know, I'm open.
I think we're breaking out bad signal. I think we should wrap it up.
Yeah, exactly. Here, hold on. I will say... Let's say this. So let me get the average of our scores here. 7.2 plus, just real quick, because I never did this, plus 6.8. I got to do this the old school way.
Oh, boy.
Three.
Use that common 7. Core
7.06. 7.06 is our average for this film. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's right there. So
that's our first 7.06 average ever so far, by the way. Our very first one.
I think you might be correct about that.
We should celebrate. Everybody drink.
Yeah. Drink.
All right, so any final thoughts before we shut it down? Any other MacGuffin-esque questions that you want to dig into?
Not really. I do want to say I think there is a ton more stuff to talk about. So watch it. If you're listening to this, watch it with your friends. Talk about it, because there's a whole thing with, like, at the beginning with Jack and his lady of the night, because, you know, he's a pimp, and a relationship between them, and there's a whole bunch of stuff to talk about.
Even though there's long extended static shots of dialogue and stuff, there's a lot going on in the movie.
Yeah, because he even has a love-hate relationship with him.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, history and stuff that's hinted at in these characters in the movie, so it, you know, to provide a little background story for them, which I think he did a really good job of establishing.
Yeah,
I just realized, I said, hey, if you want to watch it with your friends, and if you're listening to this, and I'm like, it's just our friends that are listening to this, so then they're gonna ask us to watch this movie now.
Oh yeah,
I'm just kidding.
Our friends listen to this? If so, I'm
vicious
thrilled
circle.
To hear that.
Nah. I did have one friend say
that she just
likes all our photos on Instagram and doesn't actually listen to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
she didn't say that directly, but I was picking up what she was putting down. 2 days from now, or whenever, 2 days after this comes out, she's like, I heard what you said.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the test. Plant the seed and see if she comes back with the response.
Yeah.
No. That's pretty funny.
You never know on the MacGuffin Guild if you're getting set up for a test. So
yeah.
Beware. Anyway, all right. Any final thoughts? No?
Negative.
All right. Well, always a pleasure, fellas. Justin, Mike,
Pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
Word up.
This was a fun one. And look, what I like about this film, too, is there was so much to talk about, not only about the story, but also about the three actors and the director, that it went so long, we didn't have the normal amount of time that we would have to work with to just kind of play around, because there was just so much to kind of dig into, which was kind of cool. It was a nice change of pace.
Yeah.
So, anyway, although I do want to think about our days in a Turkish prison, as Mike said.
Yeah. Well, we'll do a whole episode about the time we...
We got to get into that one at some point.
Yeah.
The people need to know.
It's not the time right now.
No. We got to warm up to that.
Yeah.
Three of us have never worked the same job before, have we? I know you and I worked together, Pat. Two jobs.
No, you and I have worked together twice, but me and Mike never worked together, right, Mike? We never worked a job together, did we?
Yeah, we did.
Hold on, let me think.
There was a bunch of us that worked there. A group of us. I'll give you a hint. Chris Wilson. That's a big hint.
Oh, Kmart. Yeah, what am I thinking?
Yep.
Yeah,
I was only there for
you,
like
Justin?
2 months.
I worked there, too.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you were there at the same time. Were you there at the same time?
I don't think so. I think I was
like
18.
I think you were already gone.
Yeah, I worked a couple months after high school.
Yeah, Mike, how did I forget that?
Pat, me, you, the Proctors, Chris Wilson, and Scott had quit. I actually took his position.
Oh, okay.
So...
Shout out to Scott Kennedy. Right. He did quit. You took his position.
And now they're out of business. Good job.
we drove them right into the ground. See what they get for putting us in charge? Yeah. Holy shit.
Oh, my God.
Man, I'll tell you what. I would say I'm the best housewares lead since Bruce Campbell.
That's
what I like to tell my friends.
There are a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
Actually, I think there's a picture of you when you have full head of hair. What I was looking at is like you look like a really young Bruce Campbell. I have to find that picture.
Me?
I think it's on that collage that's on Wilson's wall.
Find that.
Yeah, I think you're
like
probably like 17 or 18. You got that big like all that hair, and I think there's like a period of time like maybe it was like Army of Darkness or something. I don't know. I remember a period of time where Bruce Campbell had a bunch of hair. Just reminded me of that.
But yeah, that's cool then. So I worked two jobs with you, Justin. I worked a job with Mike. So did you two ever work together? Then we could have the trifecta going.
No, we lived together.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's as good as
so
working
there,
together, I'd
there's
say.
That.
Yeah. Mike had to step in my pee.
Are you going
on multiple
to...
Multiple occasions. No, we'll let that one simmer. We'll let people think about that one.
Yeah, we'll let people use their own interpretation of that.
Yeah. All right, well, let's shut this down because I don't
think
there's
a good
any higher note
yeah,
we can hit.
That.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Justin, Mike, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And we will be back next week again. We get to do this all over again, and we'll keep having some fun. Thank you so much for being a part of this, and... Follow us on our social media. We are on Instagram. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Discord. Please become a part of this. Become a member of the guild. We appreciate everything. And we're just thankful that you guys are a part of this. We're having a lot of fun. Yes, Justin?
I also challenge people. Do something and fail at it and tell us about it. We'll share our failures, laugh, and grow from them.
We'll laugh at your failures. I think that's what
you're saying. We'll laugh at your failures. No, we'll laugh at our like you're experiencing our failure right now, so we want to know your failures.
Yeah. If you listen to the show long enough, you'll hear all of our failures. We got plenty of them. So,
share
your stories with us. We want to hear. And this is a safe space.
Sure.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time.
All right, y'all.
Peace. Have a good night.
See ya.
Better than this.